Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Getting my dad to say I love you.
To say what?
Say he loves it.
Outrageous.
Bloody nonsense.
All right, Dad, another episode of Getting My Dad to Say I Love You. This week's guest is Joel Kim Booster.
Yes.
Yeah.
So... I read about him, yeah.
I gave you some research on Joel Kim Booster. What have you found out about Joel Kim Booster?
I think he was born in South Korea.
Right.
But he's lived all his life in America. I can't quite recall. Was he adopted, or I can't remember quite what happened?
I don't actually know this. I'm going to probably find out when I talk to him.
Right. But anyway, he was brought up in America,
yeah,
and went to University of, gosh, where was it? I can't remember which university it was. But he studied theatre studies, so there you are.
He studied theatre studies. He also used to be my next-door neighbour for about a year.
What, in LA?
In LA, yeah.
Okay.
He was my next-door neighbour. It's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah. So does he speak Korean? I couldn't work that out.
I don't know. I'll ask him. I can hear my mum just in the background now. So, Dad, anything else that jumped out about Joel's career that was of note?
He seems to be quite successful as a comic, comedian, writer, that sort of thing.
He's very funny. Yeah, he writes on some funny shows.
I didn't quite get around to listening to one of his scripts or something.
His scripts?
Well, not a script, but one of his, you know, like a... podcast or, you know, YouTube or, you know, one of those
just
things.
A YouTube. Yeah, that'll do. You didn't get around to listening to one of his YouTubes. All right, well, that's fine. Well, I'm going to go chat to Joel about his parental upbringing. I'll see you in a bit. Welcome, Joel Kim Booster, to the podcast. How are you, mate?
I'm doing okay.
Okay. Yeah. Very, very honest. Very un-LA of you.
Yeah, I have, like, I don't know, I think I have, like, tuberculosis right now or something. I am very ill, but...
Oh, God.
Getting by, yeah.
But you're... thanks for still doing the show. My mother-in-law actually had that disease last year.
Oh, really?
Which is more common than you think, like 30%
I didn't
of the
think
world.
People still got it. I thought it was 30... just something that...
No, it's a thing.
...happened in Moulin Rouge, and then... was we were sort of over it, but.
No, it's like 30% of the world have it in some capacity right now.
Oh, wow.
So well, at least we brought some awareness to what most people thought was an extinct disease. So yeah, what I like to do at the start of this is, even though I love small talk, I want to do small talk in me, but what I like to do to keep the podcast on track is right at the gate, I like to ask our guests, because it's about my dad's initially inability to say I love you. Have your parents said the phrase I love you to you before?
Yes.
They have, right?
Many times.
Many times, that's good. You're from a very loving family. And you've got, your family story is unique in the podcast guesting I've had so far, and that you are not completely unique in the world, but you're adopted.
Yeah, adopted when I was like 3 months old from Korea. And so into a white family in the Midwest.
That's okay. But they were very, both the dad and the mom, very loving. Like, it's just like always loving.
So yeah, I would say my mom is definitely more openly affectionate and was openly affectionate than my dad was growing up. My dad is like second generation German or something like that. Grew up on a farm, like very traditional man vibes. He was like John Wayne, you know, that was like his idol and like who he sort of based his entire personality around. and, you know, our interests didn't really align growing up. You know, like I was a very like artsy fartsy kid. I wanted to do theater and I wanted to, you know, write and I wanted to, you know, perform all the time. And he was definitely, you know, I think he wished my brother, it was much more aligned with my dad. Like he would take us to tractor shows. He worked for a farm equipment company.
Right.
Building tractors for a living. And so that was like sort of, he would take us to all these like farm expos and you could not have paid me enough money to be interested in a farm expo at the age of like 9. But my brother was, so he at least got that.
Was he older brother, younger brother?
Older brother. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So he at least had that. But yeah, I was just so uninterested. And I do remember, you know, my mom sort of forcing my dad to do one-on-one activities with me. I only remember one day where we sort of had like our dad-son date, where we went golf carting and then we had skillets from Applebee's.
Golf karting, is that just driving around in a golf cart? Or you mean golf, playing golf?
Go-karting.
Go-karting. Yeah. All right. I thought it was like people who don't want to hit a golf ball. Yeah. All right. So you went go-karting and did you enjoy that at least?
I did, I think. Yeah, I remember. I remember enjoying it. Okay. There was a lot of like I was very attached to my dad in some respects, but like we didn't have like, it was very familial. It was never like, my dad was not my best friend.
Right, I get that.
You know,
I get that.
Like, so it was weird. I remember being like, why are we doing this? Like, I know you don't really want to be here. I don't necessarily want to be here. Like, our relationship was fine the way it was. Like, we don't need to be go-karting. I didn't need the proof that he loved me. Like, I believed it. I bought it for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that's an interesting thing where sometimes it's weird, like, you guys have got to bond over this specific activity, but there's no need, there's no reason why you necessarily would have a shared activity with someone who's 30 or like my dad, like I've mentioned before here, he's obsessive old documents and history and stuff, but he knows nothing about sport or movies or art and all that, so we have nothing in really very little in common. This podcast is a good, I guess this is kind of a bonding thing because he does the intros with me now, but I still, you know, like him and loved him and still love him, but yeah, there's I'm just trying to think of like this is a very British thing. His thing was drinking. He's like wants to drink alcohol or have me drink alcohol with him. When I said before, when I've turned him down for having alcohol, he looks so sad, like I've sort of said I don't want to be in the family anymore. So I wonder if that's like a weird generational thing to that kind of dad where they feel like I need to find this common ground with my son.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like my dad gave up pretty early. Okay. I think he like got a pretty good sense of like my vibe as a child and was like, I don't think this is going to happen for us. Mm-hmm. But I never doubted that he loved me. I mean, I think like as a kid, I never doubted that, and I didn't care about necessarily like his approval. Like I didn't care if we were interested in the same things. I will say, like, once I moved into high school, like, it became a little bit more important for me to get his approval, I will say.
Yeah.
Like, I did insane things. Like, I played basketball in high school. and it was just specifically for my dad, really. Like, I hated it. I was not good at it. I like basketball.
Did he tell you, or did you just think, oh, he'll like it if I do this?
It was that. Because the thing is like, you don't grow up in Chicago in the mid-90s and don't love basketball. Like, that was like the height of the Bulls. It was Jordan, it was Rodman, it was Pippen. It was like the time to love basketball. And even as like a little like gay boy at like 7 years old. Like I was like glued to the TV every championship, like rooting on the Bulls. And so like I had an interest in basketball. Did I have the skill set to play basketball? No, I was an effeminate asthmatic, very not athletic in the slightest. Barely played in the game.
Did he come and watch you in a game of some capacity?
He, I will say this of my dad. My dad was at every game.
Oh.
My dad was at every play. My dad was at every basically event. My mom at none of it.
Interesting. That's funny.
Yeah, she just I don't know. My mom and my dad were both like homebodies, but for some reason my dad was the one who was sort of dispatched to offer parental support in those
He's
ways.
Representing the two of them at all events. Oh, that's great that he came to. I mean, that's sweet that he. So do you even remember like you're playing? I'm trying to put myself a camera on you as a teenager playing basketball, even though you're not good enough and you kind of know you're not good enough, but you think your dad, did you play, come on for 2 minutes, have a shit game, and he's there going like, good job? Is he still like that? That's nice.
Yeah. He was always, I think, very, I think knowing me for my entire life and then at the age of 16, suddenly deciding, or 15, deciding that I wanted to play basketball was like, who is this child? this is not my son. But he was, I think, thrilled that I was interested in doing it.
That's sweet. Well, then it does feel like, The common thing I kind of discuss on here is a lot of when I get to talk to successful, talented people like yourself, is like it requires two things, I think, this industry, whether it's stand-up or movies or whatever, is a fearlessness and a work ethic. So, because people get lucky, but I still think I'll work your ass off. So your dad...
Yeah.
He was supportive. That's great. Even though you guys didn't, I think, having not the same interests is totally reasonable, normal. The fact he was still there is a really like, I don't know, it seems like a nice thing to me. But yeah, do you remember like thinking like, whatever I do, I need to work my ass off? Is that from your dad? Is that from your mom? Or is that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. Honestly, like they definitely both instilled in me a pretty like, deep work ethic growing up. I think, you know, we had both my brother and my sister and I all had jobs at like starting at like 14, which is, I think, as young as you can be and still have a job.
Is that what like paper boy? There's nothing. Well, can you legally have a real job below that?
My brother did landscaping. I worked at the library putting books away. My sister was like a babysitter. So like we all had some version of a job starting at like 14. And that's when we stopped getting allowances too.
That's a massive, I am a big believer in that as being in a really important thing. That's crazy. At 14, you stop getting allowance. Cause most, I think most people in this, fine, whatever, not this country, can happen. Most people under 18 in, I guess, UK and America, kind of Western society are used to, just getting that lovely free money to fuck about with. T-Rex,
I know. I knew people in my early 20s who were still getting like monthly allowances from their parents.
Dude, I talked about this before. There's a guy in my school who was still getting his sandwiches made from at 18, and I was like,
"Yeah,
fuck,
that's psycho."
You, I had to, like, not that I had to struggle, but I had to like put meat in bread at like 10. Like it wasn't like I had.
Yeah.
People still getting allowed. Yeah, the old trustafarian trust fund. Kids is a thing. So you from 14, no allowance. So that's one of those things that probably at the time, I don't know, my sister would always complain to my parents, well, my own friends are getting all this stuff. But that's a thing that were you at the time going, bull, this is bullshit, or were you like just embraced it? Were you just like rolled with it?
I think there was a couple things going on. First off, so I was homeschooled until I was 15, sophomore year of high school.
And just can you just explain it to someone? Because I remember there was a kid I knew growing up, and that means you and your siblings together would have a teacher come in and teach you, or would you just, what's that tutoring?
It was me and my brother at home. My godmother would be there also, but she worked from home, so she wasn't really teaching us. And so we had like books that we would supposedly need to be working out of, like workbooks and stuff like that. Yeah. But basically, my brother played video games all day.
Oh, so there wasn't even like an actual, you literally like, they were like, read these books and pick it up yourself.
We ran wild.
That's crazy.
And luckily, I love to read. Like I was just basically reading whatever I wanted to read. And then I would like pick up the history textbook and like read it like a book. And we weren't given tests. We weren't given like papers to write. Jesus. Until I was probably about like 14. Like my freshman year of high school, they switched me to an online like homeschool thing where I had like a teacher that I was like communicating with on AIM basically. And I remember like the first paper that I wrote, they were like, what is this? This is bad. This is really, really bad. You clearly don't know how to do this. And so they had to really like, the thing was though, is that like my reading comprehension and my ability to write was pretty high, but like, I just didn't know how to like do homework because I wasn't doing it for my entire life. And like, math and science was abysmal. Like I just, because all I would do is I would do the math workbook, but I would just look up all the answers in the back.
Yeah, I mean,
because nobody was paying attention
smart,
to what
that's
we were
a smart
doing.
Kid. If no one's checking you, so just to the uninitiated, and that is me. What was the logic behind the homeschooling, and then the logic, and why did that change? That's what I'm curious about.
They were deeply, deeply religious people, very, very conservative. Evangelical Southern Baptists, and they did not want us learning about sex or evolution, basically, and they didn't want us sort of being around other bad influences out in the world, and so they kept us all home. And it changed because, like, from the time I was a child, like probably seven or eight, I was desperate to go to school. Right. Like my family is a family of introverts, and then there's me, who just wanted to like talk and be out in the world and be around people and like just like and make friends. And I just didn't have many outlets for that. As a homeschooled kid, I was very lonely, and so I was just like constantly begging my parents to send me to school. And it didn't happen until sophomore year. Finally, I sort of wore them down, and they sent me to a private school. Private Baptist school, which was like terrible for me in a lot of other ways. But it was nice because I was finally around people. And then junior year, I switched to public school. And that's when it all sort of came crashing down. That's when I like started drinking and smoking weed and came out of the closet and started hooking up. And like all the things that they were scared and worried would happen within a month of sending
them. They must have been like, well, that's so annoying because that's not the reason you started drinking and doing all that stuff, because you had been deprived of it rather than if you just gradually, you know, my dad's been trying to give me wine from when I was about seven. So then by the time I go, I'll drink, but I'm not like freedom. That's crazy. Yeah. That's so funny though. They were like, Christ, we knew this would happen.
They didn't know about any of this for like the first year that I was in public school, but like literally I started in September, and by October I was out of the closet, had smoked weed for the first time, drank for the first time, like hooked up for the first time, the whole nine yards. Like it was like I was off to the races. I was just a powder keg, you know, like you deprive somebody of freedom. Mm-hmm. For so long, and then as soon as you get a little bit, you're just gonna go nuts.
Yeah, it's like a mum of two small children going away for the weekend and just goes fucking crazy and starts doing coke and stuff. That's mad. It's all right, mate.
Yeah,
look at this. This is dedicated. This is the work ethic we're talking about. You've got tuberculosis and you're still on the podcast. This is what we need. We need more people like Joel Kim Booster in society.
Addicted to podcasts. I will do a podcast no matter what.
The Republican Party are delighted to have people like you in society who will just keep going no matter what. No crying, just getting on with it.
Show up to work, get everyone sick. Just COVID. Destroy my immune system. Yeah. Never rest, always working, never stopping, constantly sick.
That's keep going. You still, as long as you're giving me content, I don't care about your health. So, but that's mad though. So you, They were. That's weird that you essentially got a job before you went to school. It's just kind of crazy. So you must have been in that. You must have been in that library. Like, it must have been also half. Everyone must be quiet. You must have been like, I want to talk to all these humans who are like.
Well, it basically it more so became that like my only friends were these like 40-some-year-old librarians.
Yes,
like I was one of those kids that like if there was an adult to talk to, I was like chatting up a storm. If you were over 40, you were like so fascinating to me. I just wanted to be friends with women in their 40s, which is like, you know, other than the sucking dick, like the gayest thing about me as a child was just like, I was like, from the time I was like a young child, was like, oh my God, you're a 40-year-old woman. I'm going to worship you.
That's
and that hasn't changed.
That
has not changed.
That's really funny. Is that ahead of sucking the dick? I don't know. That might be one up on the list. That's really funny. Do you know what? That's a funny, it's so funny how like these things inform you, because on so many levels that deprivation of you going to a school and stuff is like so frustrating and annoying. But then that skill set, weirdly, I thought, what a great skill set to have working in Hollywood now, just to have the ability to talk to women more powerful than you in their 40s, decision makers. That's really funny. That's so fun. Yeah, that's the weird thing about when we drill deep into this stuff. It's like there's stuff that obviously you're like, I wish that hadn't been the case, but then you've still been armored with these sort of skills that are so that you're doing now, that you speaking to people confidently, that the way you kind of had the thirst to learn on your own, I think that's maybe by accident rather than design, but that's, you know, being a writer and stuff is about being curious about different things, isn't it?
I got really lucky. If I hadn't learned how to read at a young age and sort of fallen in love with that, I don't know where I would be right now, because like I, when I say my brother like truly just sat around and played video games all day, like that is what he did. And like, he's doing well now. Like he is in a relationship. He got his GED eventually. Like he moved out, which is something I never thought he would do. Like he moved out when he was like 27, 28. And, I never thought I'd see that day happen.
Yeah. So, well, that's good.
So he's doing, he figured it out. Eventually, but it was a real, like, you know, once he discovered World of Warcraft online, it was game over, you know, like in terms of education.
That's so weird. Yeah, you're lucky that you didn't have that same fascination with the little green guys on the screen, because that would have been
And so, it's crazy because I do now, but
Do you now? That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I always did. Like, I played video games much more casually, but like my brother wouldn't let me play, you know. It was typical older brother, little brother. It was like, your turn's coming up as soon as I die. But my brother was so good at video games, he never died. So
your brother he accidentally made you good at reading.
I'm just sitting there reading the text of all the video games he was playing, basically.
Just reading the instructions. You like, that's so funny. That's so interesting. So then, that work ethic, that seems, I can see that's where that came from. And then the fearlessness, is that just... that must be linked as well. Is that kind of from the fact that you were like, fuck it, I'm just like, who, like, I'm out in the wild now, I've just got to go for stuff and not care? And like, what, because did you go straight into like comedy from college?
No.
Did you go to college?
I went to college. I went to theater school. Studied in the UK, actually, for like...
Where did you study?
Yeah. The Globe,
oh,
bitch.
Oh my God.
The Globe. And all over the place. But... I wanted to do theater, which is so silly, in this country anyways.
Yes. Well, no, it depends which part of the country, but yes.
I definitely think it's not as easy. It's certainly more difficult to make a living doing storefront theater in Chicago, than it is, you know, doing theater in London.
Of course.
But. Yeah, and just culturally, I don't think our country values theater in the same way that your country does.
Well, it's because money is the paramount thing in this country. So they're like, well, how much do you make from that? But you could be on a TV show and you could make more.
Exactly. And so the fearlessness, I think, like, came from the independence that my parents instilled in me. Like, I went to public school my junior year, had a blast. Was living my life. My senior year, parents read my journal, found out all the shit I was getting into.
That's the scene from a sick.
Yeah.
Well, like, somebody's going, is that a bit broad? No one's actually going to find it in a journal, but they actually found out.
Well, and it gets even worse because I wasn't even writing like, dear journal, this is what happened today. It was literally just lists. I was too lazy to even write like content. It was just lists. It was like things I lied about this week. Wow. Guys I've hooked up with this week. Like things like that. Like crazy, like making it so easy for them.
It's like so easy. Yeah, because if it was long-winded, they didn't have to read, they'd like, tap out. Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't have to like sift through my dreams or my hopes or wishes. It was just like right there.
Yeah.
Like a reasons a to make my parents countdown. Yeah.
You were ahead of your time, mate. You were ready for the online world.
Hoisted by my own petard. And so that caused a huge rift in my relationship with my family. Mm-hmm. They sent me to an inpatient mental hospital for teens.
Oh my.
Because they were worried that I was like addicted to drugs and was having risky sex, which was not true. I was doing exactly what all my peers were doing. And by the way, was like crushing it at school. Like captain of everything I was involved in. And like, you know, I was only there for 2 years, but I like ended up doing quite well in school. And so, you know, it was like really frustrating. So I got out of there and then moved out of my house and moved in with a friend.
At what age are you here, sorry?
17 going on 18. So I hadn't turned 18 yet, but I was about to. And so that was in like October of my senior year of high school. And then I really didn't talk to them until I graduated high school again. It was difficult, but I think like in terms of like the fearlessness, I think like they instilled in us like this work ethic and this like self-reliance at a really young age. And because of that, like I sort of was able to call their bluff because they were like, you can either live here and live the lifestyle and by our rules, or you can go. And I was like, well, you've given me all the tools, so fuck you, I'm going to go.
I was just thinking that's so kind of is the irony of them like kind of the way they brought you up, trying to keep you on a track, but then giving you all accidentally just arming you of all this stuff. That's fascinating.
Yeah. And I, you know, I haven't taken a dime from my parents since I was 16. And I'm really, and like, it's one of those things where it's like, whatever, like no judgment to anybody who does receive support from their parents in any way. Like, I think it's great. I'm really deeply proud that I am.
You should be.
I've been able to like be self-made in that way. And I'm grateful to them, honestly. Like at the end of the day, like I've kind of come swinging back around and been like, thank you for, you know, making it so that I could do all this on my own. And I think like that was the start of the fearlessness. Like it was sort of like I was on a ledge, you know, and I was like, I don't want to jump. And then my parents sort of forced my hand and I was like, well, I guess I got to jump. And from there, nothing felt as scary, you know, like moving to New York to pursue comedy, you know, moving to LA before I had a job, you know, like all of these things, I can trace it all back to that moment of being like, no, I'm going to live my life and I'm not going to let these people control me completely. And, you know, we reconciled and like things are much better now, like a lot better. But it took a while to get there.
Yeah, I bet. So are you now at the point where, I guess this is, they're so culturally different in the way they view the world. And I assume, are they still as religious as when so how do they feel about, when you get your, you know, you've got a movie coming out soon, you've got stuff. Do you tell them when you get good news? Do you care? Do they care? No.
I think, I don't think my parents have ever seen me perform. They've never seen any of my stand up. They don't know about the movie. You know, I was on one season of an NBC show that got canceled and like, that's the closest they've gotten. Cause they were like, hey, we saw this commercial on TV. Are you on a show right now? And I was like,
that's a funny way for them to find out.
And I was like, oh yeah. But like, they're so uninterested in the kind of work that I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because they know they wouldn't like it or agree with it, that I'm fine with them. And quite frankly, like, it is one of those things, again, that happened really early in life because, like, you know, my mom, like I said, never came to any of my high school plays or musicals or anything like that. And it really did sort of, like, release me from caring what they thought about what I was doing. Like, parental approval is just not something that is in me. It's not something that I seek. It's not something that is important to me by any means. And it is all just sort of for me, which is freeing in a big way.
That sounds way too healthy for this podcast. that's like I'm jealous of the fact you don't, you're just doing everything for you and you don't, that's the most sound-minded way of dealing with all this, I think, because it's so fucking up and down. So when you have people you can share your good, you've got so much good, I feel like you've got people you can share your good news with though, right? You've got tons of mates and...
Yeah, I've got tons of friends. I've got a lovely, you know, boyfriend that is very supportive, and I get what I need from other people. And that's always sort of, like, that's always sort of been, I think a lot of gay people, queer people in general really relate to this, but, like, you find the family that fills in the gaps, you know? Like, I love my family. I love my parents. I love my mom. But it is, like, they cannot be everything to me.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot provide everything emotionally for me, and I just know that. I just know their limitations as human beings, and I don't begrudge them that. I just had to find, you know, people in my life that could fill in the gaps and sort of, like, support me in the ways that they can't. And that was, like, once I figured that out, I think it was really life-changing. And I think a lot of queer people sort of are forced into that realization really early on.
Yeah, that's a really... I've just started therapy for the first time out here, which is, like, so cliche.
Oh, congrats.
Thank you. I have to. It's, like, illegal to live here for this long without doing it. But my guy says something, you know, about, which is, there's a word. I forget, there's an actual word for it. But when you get to an age and you realize when you're young, you see your parents are up here all the time, and you get to an age and you're like, oh, but I feel like you got this much earlier than most people, which is you're not looking up to them as these perfect people.
They're not on a pedestal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You've known that for much longer than I guess a lot of people, including myself. And then it's kind of just like accepting them, because this frustrating, you know, my dad, I love him. He wants to be part of this project and all this, but stuff he does frustrates me. But then there's a point where I still find myself wanting to, like, just tweak him into something else, but actually just learning that that's who they are and where the way they are, and not hating on them for that. But then having those other people to fill in the gaps is a great, that feels like a really healthy aid toward that.
Yeah.
Right.
Normally a lot of people in our position, choose either podcast or therapy. and for you to do both is really huge.
There we go.
Most people in LA in our business would say, like, oh, I'm just going to do the podcast and that will be my therapy.
Oh, God.
Or
just do, like, a lot of exercise. That's the other one. I'm just working out a lot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yoga out the trauma for sure.
Come here, son.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Have you done therapy?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you've done it. But you're talking like someone who is very healthily knows everything. So that's why I didn't mean, I meant it. But you strike me as someone who's done it, but actually, because there's certain people I've met out here who say they're doing it and do it. And I go, you know, when you're like, you think someone needs therapy and then they do it. And then you think, I think you need to be zoning in on different things to what you're zoning in on, because they've not helped you on that. They've sort of enabled you. But as a Brit, it's definitely more of an unusual thing. But I find it quite funny because I want the guy to just sort of call me an arsehole all the time. But he's actually quite supportive and sort of tries to make me look at the positive of stuff. But that's my own shit. But sorry to bring it. That just went into a little self introspection by me there. But that's crazy though that they've got. No, yeah, they're just different people, but you know that, so you don't.
Yeah,
seek
the validation. Are sort of generally aware that I am.
They know
a success.
You're thriving and doing well. Yes,
yeah. But like, in terms of the specifics, no. Like, they knew when I quit my day job to do stuff full time, but like, they are very uncurious, I think, for their own sake, about the specifics of what I do.
Yeah, when I talk to my parents on the phone, I don't know how regularly you do it or anything, but I feel like a lot of it's just catching them up on stuff I've been up to. But I guess if you don't have that, you finding out what's going on their end, I guess, is a lot of that going on.
Yeah, there's there's a lot of like life stuff, I think, like life milestone stuff that's been happening in my life that I keep my mom. You know, my mom is really excited about certain things. And like, so I should say, I don't know, Chris, if you know this, but my dad died like 9 months ago.
Oh, I did not know that. I'm sorry, buddy. No,
I
sorry.
Thought that was part of the reason you wanted me to come on the pod.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, dude.
No, it was, he died of COVID back in March. And so I guess like a year ago almost now. And wow. I cannot believe it's been that long.
Yeah, man. I'm sorry.
But no, I mean, we got to a really good place, I think, because like I reached a level of like I reached this point in my life where like I could finally call and talk to him about like plants. Like my dad, you know, as a farm, like he had a huge garden growing up, was always doing like yard work and stuff like that. And like during the pandemic, like during lockdown, I just became like plant guy. And so like I was able to call home and be like, you know, like ask him questions about like growing tomato plants, which is something that we did together growing up. Like and I think he was like desperate for me as a like a 7-year-old to be interested in, and I could not have cared less. And now, as it's so weird how it comes full circle at 32, I'm like, oh my God, I just ate. No, I'm 34. But at 34,
we knock off 2 years, mate, because of the pandemic. Don't worry, we all do that.
But now I am, you know, and I think like one of the last things that I talked to him about before he died or before he got sick, was I built a squat rack in my backyard, which was the handiest thing I've ever done. I had to like pour concrete, you know, like measure wood, things I never thought I would ever have to do, that the pandemic sort of like brought to me. And like, I don't think my dad has ever been prouder of me than when I sent him like photos and videos of this like finished squat rack that I like created in my backyard.
I don't even know what that is. So that's how impressive that is. It's in my head. I'm thinking, hang on, you mean for doing weights, squatting?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I thought it was like because you were talking about tomatoes. I was like, do you have to like get a special rack to grow tomatoes?
No, this was like amazing. So that I could like work out like prison style in my backyard.
That's great. That's amazing. Yeah. But that's Yeah, I mean, I'm terribly sorry for your loss. That's fucking brutal. But it seems like to be able to, yeah, even those moments that you managed to share like that, that's kind of what it's about, isn't it? In a weird way, just like not necessarily, doesn't have to be every fucking thing we do is, but if you could just have those little moments of connection with someone, that's kind of what life's about.
I feel really grateful that by the end, like our relationship had reached this point where that was where we end, like where things sort of left off, is that, you know, we had reached the impasse, I think, of like, you know, this is my life. That's not going to change. And we sort of met each other at this place of like, they accepted that. And like, I don't think they ever, he, you know, changed his expectations for what I would be as a son. And I changed my expectations for what he would be as a dad. And we were able to find like this really great, peaceful, loving middle ground that took us years and years and years to get to, because I just think that, like, because we were such different people, my dad was so, we were so frustrated with each other. Like, I'm much more like my mother than I am my father, and yeah. I think that, like, we just spoke different languages the entire time growing up. Like, he was this stoic, like, you know, farmer basically, and I was this like effusive, like, loud gay kid basically, who wanted to like yell and scream and be the center of attention. And that was just like anathema to what my dad was so shy, like could not, like would not talk, like just like anytime he would come to basketball games, like other parents would try to engage, and I think they, like, people always would be like, is your dad like kind of rude? But I would be like, no, he's just like painfully shy as a person, and that was just like not who I was. Like, I just wanted to be out and about and around people. And so it was really nice that we were able to get to that point before he passed. I will say, like, the one big regret that I have is, the one big regret I have is that, you know, after the sort of turmoil of me coming out, and then like moving out, and then once we came back, we started talking again. The thing is that, like, I had never been in a relationship that mattered. And so it never made sense to circle back around to the gay thing and be like, hey, how do you guys still think I'm going to hell?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it just like, it became, it, for me, it was like, oh, okay. When I am at the point in a relationship where I want to bring somebody home, that's when I'll address it, and that's when I'll figure out where they really are with this part of my life. And I just, you know, I went most of my entire adult life without being in a relationship. I was like very career focused, and that's what I wanted to do. And like, I just wanted to fuck around. I didn't want to be in a relationship. And so it just never came up, and I kept putting it off and putting it off and putting it off and never having that conversation. And then my dad died, and, you know, like he died in March, and then in May, I met the guy that I'm currently dating and in love with, and think, you know, is probably going to be here for the long haul. And it finally was this moment where I like called my mom, and I was like, you know, I don't know how dad would have felt about this. But I do want to know, like, if I bring this guy home, like, what is going to be the vibe? And she was like, I think that, you know, we're not on the same page about your lifestyle, but if you brought someone home that you loved, we would love him just as much as Dan, who is my brother-in-law, my sister's husband. And that was a really big sort of freeing moment for me. And it is something that, like, my mom assures me would have been my dad's point of view as well. And it really hurts that I didn't have that conversation with him before he died, and that I won't ever know what he'd think of John Michael. Like, I actually think he really, really would like my boyfriend now, and it sucks that he's not going to meet him. And that's like the one thing that still, you know, a year later is really difficult.
Oh, dude, yeah. I mean, that's just brutal, and Yeah, I don't think you wouldn't be alone to be wondering about that. But yeah, I guess you've got what your mum says, and she has no reason to manufacture what would be there. Yeah. But yeah, I'm sorry, dude. That's just I'm really happy that you and your dad got into a good accepting place there. That's a really nice point to have got to just though with each other before.
It's the biggest. I mean, like,
that's the positive you can take from the shitty.
Like, I just can't imagine how I'd feel if this had happened in like 2012 or something like that, when our relationship was a little bit more rocky. So I'm grateful that we at least, you know, I can remember the last time he said I love you, and that is like really special, and like, is not something that comes easy to my dad to express that kind of emotion. Like, I think our dads are similar in that way. You know, he was not an affectionate guy, but like, he definitely expressed how proud he was of me and how much he loved me, like, a lot more in the last year that he was alive than any other time in my life growing up.
Well, I think you've got a very healthy outlook to what is kind of, you know, that information of that event can be, you can take from it what you want, but the fact you're generally like leaning toward the positive, I think, is a really healthy thing. Because like you said, it's, yeah, I mean, not to equate stuff, but my mum's, I've mentioned before, and has got stage 4 cancer, and yeah, my brain often goes like, fuck all this, but then I keep trying to remember, like, well, it could have happened during the pandemic when you couldn't even like leave the country, and I couldn't have got, and I got to go back and see her, and who knows where that's going to lead. But there's always two ways to look at these things, and I understand that you have there's a regret that you're going to wonder about, but if you can always kind of choose to, if you can do your best to that positive that you guys got into a really nice place, I think that's very impressive, man. And it's, yeah, I'm sorry that you've had to go through that loss, but I'm happy you guys got to a much healthier place with each other.
Yeah. It's tough. And the COVID of it all is like the shittiest part.
I know.
Like,
yeah.
It's just the worst.
Oh man. Fuck. You've made me cry. I don't know what else to say apart from that's what was happening there. But yeah, man, fucking hell. Well, I'm really happy that you're such a fucking well balanced. I want to just talk about how well you're doing, but you're actually just you seem a very well balanced person, which I think is actually more important than all the other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, what, it's the therapy and it's the medication. I'm, you know, and it's a lot of, and things are, it is crazy because like things are going rather well for me right now in my life, and I keep being like, oh my God, like, when is the other shoe going to drop? And people keep reminding me, like, well, your dad did die a year ago. So it does feel like that was the shoe that dropped. And now this is the thing. This is the shoe. The good stuff is the balancing of things.
Exactly.
So that's what I'm trying to focus on. But I'm always that person who I'm like, what awful thing?
No, I know.
Is about to happen.
I'm the same. I'm like, if everything's going too well, you're like, the universe is going to realign. But then you forget other bad stuff has happened. But well, mate. But before we've got to wrap this up in a sec. But before we do, thanks for being so candid and honest. And I'm excited. I get to see you tonight in real life, and I get to get tuberculosis from you if I get close enough. Before we go, last thing, my dad, he doesn't really know any of the guests, so this isn't but I got him to look you up before, and he has one question for you that I've pre-recorded, and producer Paul's going to quickly play that and before we wrap up. So Paul, can you just quickly play the question?
How Korean does Joel feel, having seemingly been brought up in America, never lived in Korea?
In my dad's voice, that sounds like way more colonial than I think he needs it to sound, but I think he's
incredible. That's a really interesting question, and it's a question that I've been talking a lot about in the last couple of years. I think is like, you know, Asian identity issues have sort of come to the fore, because like I've always said, I feel very connected to being Asian American, like racially, like there is, like, I've always felt Asian, you know, I've always been very aware of that and sort of connected to that, like as a racial group, but I do not necessarily feel connected to being Korean because I just don't culturally, you know, I don't know, you know, a lot of like the specifics of Korean culture. I love the food, you know. I'm excited to go back eventually. But you know, like my big joke is that I don't know who as a Korean person I'm supposed to hate. You know, I don't know like which other Asians I'm supposed to be racist against because I didn't have Korean grandparents to sort of pass that animosity down through the generations to me. So I'm not sure which one it is. So yeah, it's definitely something that I'm interested in sort of delving deeper into, I think, because there is a bigger, larger conversation happening within the community right now about like how helpful the term Asian American even is, because our cultures are so different. And lumping us all together doesn't necessarily assist, because I think you look at things like college admissions where they're like, oh, like, you know, Asian Americans are being hurt by affirmative action, when in fact, like, that's not necessarily true. Like when you look at like, you know, people love to sort of point to Asian Americans as like this model minority because they're doing well. And like, oh, if you know, the median income for Asian Americans, quote unquote, is much higher than a lot of other races. But if you actually break it down by ethnic group, like there are like, you know, communities of Filipino immigrants that are living so far below the poverty line that like it doesn't make any sense to look at just Asian Americans as a whole. So there's like a big discussion, I think, happening about, you know, whether or not we should, you're seeing a lot more people, I think, identify specifically by their ethnic background than they are as Asian Americans. So that's a long answer
Hannah,
for your
dad. No. It's interesting. Hannah always, because Hannah's Filipino, Scottish, she always goes, Filipino, is it? She's like, we'd have forgotten. She's like, no one ever. It's a broad term, but that's interesting to my dad. I'm more surprised that my dad actually managed to elicit such a sort of thought provoking question. So I'm proud of him. Before we go, we've got to run off, but before we do, sorry to wind this up, but I like to get the guests to just say one, just tell my dad anything you can give him as a pearl of wisdom to just say, so he can finally say I love you to me. And before we do a last little plug of your stuff.
Remember at any point on a Wednesday night, your son could contract tuberculosis and die. So tell him you love him now before he gets TB.
I love it, mate. That's fucking perfect. And then before we go, you've got anything you want to plug? You've got a movie coming out soon?
Yeah, I got a movie coming out June 3rd on Hulu. It's called Fire Island. It stars me and Bowen Yang and Margaret Cho. I wrote it and I star in it, and I'm very excited for people to see it. So,
and I just like to say, you used to be my neighbor, and you're an awesome neighbor, and your body, this is a weird thing, has just got so muscly in the last 2 years that's what I'm most proud about, because I am jealous. I'm jealous of your body.
I miss you guys as neighbors too. It's weird. I now have a new, my neighbor now is also British. And is like sort of the bizarro version of you in many ways.
I'm glad he's the bizarro version, the better version.
Not the OG.
Yeah, mate, so lovely to see you. I'll see you tonight in real life. We'll get TB together. Mate, I love you. Thanks so much.
A podcast from producerpaul.co.uk.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.